Blood Services of Illinois, providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston-Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. There are no substitutes for donated blood. It takes 45 minutes and saves lives. Information at 367-2202 or on the web at bloodservices.org. Blood donation. It's about life.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. I'm happy to take your telephone calls this afternoon. Listeners, for Greg Klein, it's our monthly program on computers. Greg Klein is science and technology reporter for the News Gazette. He writes two columns for the newspaper about computing. They run on Mondays in the circuit section of the paper. Computers and You, a topic we take up once a month on the third Monday of the month. You can join us with your questions about computers. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Thanks, Celeste. It's good to be here.
Good to see you. We've already got a listener waiting to talk with us on line four in Mattoon, so let's go right to the phones. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm calling for my sister because she can't call from work, so I'll give you all the information she gave to me. This is about a Macintosh.
Uh-huh.
Is that all right?
Sure.
She has a Notebook G4,
uh-huh.
OS X 10.8.2, and she uses the word processing program that came with a text edit,
uh-huh.
And for the life of her, she cannot figure out how to number pages. She's tried everything.
Well, I'll tell you a couple of things here.
Okay.
One is, text edit, although it's not a bad program for doing some kind of light word processing, is mm-hmm. really more of what would be classified, as the name implies, a text editor, okay? So it doesn't have very many bells and whistles, is the bottom line. And I am not certain that you can number pages with it. It may be that that it won't do that.
Okay.
It also might have to do with the printer that she's using with it as well. But I don't think it's got page numbering capability built into it. So what I'm saying is it's not intended to be a real word processor, so to speak, like Word or something
sure.
like that. Now, there are a variety of things, alternatives that she might want to look into. I don't know if she's, married to text edit and wouldn't want to consider something out. But, Apple itself makes a program called Pages. That's more of a full-featured word processor and, in fact, kind of a little desktop publishing program, right?
Mm-hmm.
They used to make AppleWorks, but they're really not improving that anymore. You can still get it, and it's still, it's still fully functional. I've used it on my Macs for a long time, so I still use it, but there's not much of a future in that. Another thing she might look into is a little program called Mariner Write, okay? Mariner, like a seaman,
sure.
Yeah.
Mariner, write as in
W-R-I-T-E, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Mariner, write.
Mm-hmm.
And that is shareware, meaning that, it's a program you can download and use, and if you keep it, you should pay them what they want. And I don't remember off the top of my head what that is, but it isn't very much, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking $20 or something like that, $20-$30.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice full-featured little word processor.
Mm-hmm.
It has the advantage of not being very taxing on your computer, so it doesn't use a lot of resources. You know, and then, okay. Of course, if you, you know, if you wanted to go nuts, you could get Microsoft Word in the Mac version. But if her word processing needs, people that have, pretty basic word processing needs, I tell them, why don't you look at something like Mariner Wright? Yeah.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Okay.
You're very welcome. Okay. Next, we talk with a listener in Charleston on line one. Hi.
Hi. I have a question. I'm also a Mac user, and I have a 10 format, a platform, but I have to go to 9 to be able to use Outlook for work purposes. And what I did was I've got a Gmail address, and I've been trying, and I'm getting online to ask other people what they've been doing to be able to import my mail addresses, all of the label, all the mail addresses from Outlook to the Google to Gmail. Is there a simple way to do that?
No.
in
a word, no.
Before we get too much farther, can you recommend another email provider that will easily let me go from Outlook to them? Rather than Gmail. I mean, I don't have to do Gmail. Is there anybody else that does a good job?
Right. I'm not sure about that. I don't know whether, like, for example, Yahoo is any easier than Gmail. I've written a column about this recently, which is why I gave you a no right away. And I think it has more to do with the limitation is more the format that Outlook stores that information in, okay? Which is a proprietary Microsoft format, right? Instead of being kind of an open standard format that you can easily transfer between programs. So essentially what I advised the person who had written me, and they were working on a PC, so you know that it may be somewhat different for you. But essentially what you have to do is you have to export your Outlook addresses in one format, right? You have to take them in, you download and install the free email program Thunderbird, okay?
Oh, okay.
You take them and you put them into Thunderbird, you import them into Thunderbird, and then you can export them from Thunderbird in a non-proprietary open format that Gmail will take up.
Okay? Oh, that sounds doable.
So that it's painful. It's a painful way to do it. And it's not that easy either. There's another little program. Again, it's free, but you have to download it that gets those addresses into Gmail. So.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. You sound like you really know what you're talking about, even though it was painful to hear. I appreciate it.
Well, again, you're doing it on a Mac, so there may be some differences in what I've described. But
you will never get me to switch.
The bottom line is it's not a very easy – how many addresses do you have?
Oh, huge amount.
Yeah, too many to just put in there, right?
I don't really want to. Although I thought I'd just convert over as I was using them. You know, I just hand type in when I was talking to people, but I've got several email lists, you know.
And they're all in Outlook on OS 9.
Yes. But as I said, my operating platform is OS 10, but I couldn't access Outlook for work purposes except on the 9 platform. So, you know, what I went through with all that was, you know, you have to import it into, I can't even think of it. Anyway, but I'll try the Thunderbird.
Yeah, see about, and again, I think at least on the PC side, what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to export those addresses from Outlook, and I think as I recall, you export them as a comma-separated value, okay? It's kind of a common data format.
Okay,
and then
yeah.
You import them into Thunderbird, and then from Thunderbird you can export them in a vCard, as I recall, format. It's a kind of a standard way of storing address information.
Okay.
And then you get a little program that will get Google Mail to pick that up.
Okay. Yes, I think it was Excel that they said I should import them into, and it didn't come out. I mean, it came out as all garbled.
Hmm. Well, it sounds to me like they probably told you to import them into Excel for the same reason, so that then you could export them as something.
Yeah, there's something called comma-separated.
Yeah, CSV, comma-separated values.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay,
so,
well, I'll try that. And what's your website?
If you can email me. If you want to email me more detail on this,
okay.
My email address is Kline, KLINE, at news-gazette.com.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
All right.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Next, we talk with a listener in Chicago on line 4. Hi.
Well, good afternoon. This is your monthly call from Chicago. Always have a problem. Love the show.
Okay.
Here's the problem. I'm streaming you now in QuickTime. I can also stream it in Real Audio. No audio at all on Windows. Now, I was told there was some problem with codecs, but I still cannot get any audio from Windows Player.
From Windows Media Player.
Right.
I don't know, Celeste, do you guys stream in Windows Media or do you stream in Real and QuickTime?
Real and QuickTime, and I think also, I don't, to tell
Real
you the quick truth.
Real QuickTime and Windows.
Yeah,
and,
I think so.
I
think all.
Yeah.
But I get no, I'm fine with the other two. But Windows Media, sometimes I get any emails where people want me to listen to something in Windows Media, and I get no audio. I get video, but no audio.
Does it, do you get any kind of an, you know, notification or error message?
What does that message say?
It doesn't say anything like that.
Nope. And I, you know, there's no way of really removing Windows, as far as I know, Windows Player, Windows Media. But I have downloaded it again and again, and in fact, I did it as late as today.
Right.
But I still get no audio.
Well, and if it's being streamed in Windows Media, I don't know why you would have this problem. But you know, you mentioned codecs, okay? Well, there are various ways of encoding streaming data like that, right? And Windows Media and other players as well, they contain you know, the ability to use some of those, but not all of them. And to use others, you sometimes have to add a little piece of software, like a, you know, kind of a little plugin, or as it's called, a codec, so that it can decode that kind of that media in that whatever format you're trying to decode, right?
Right.
So it's but normally, if you hit something that you don't have that piece of software for, you'll get a message that says you need to download this, and it'll whisk you to a website, and you can do it, right? But in this case, since you're trying to stream Windows Media into Windows Media Player, I don't understand why it wouldn't just do it, okay? Mm. Let me look at that.
Yeah. Also, you might want to get in touch with, through the website, the contact Jack Brighton, who is our web guy. And his last name is like Brighton Les in Brighton Beach.
Okay.
But
this is on your page?
Yeah, I think at the top, I think I'm not sitting in front of the computer. Greg gets it today. I think at the top of the page it says contact us. And I think you can go that way. There, somewhere on that page, somewhere there's this thing that says contact us.
And did you get my email address there?
I did.
Yeah, if you will
news-gazette.
News-gazette.com, yeah.
Huh?
If you'll, you know, send me a little description of that, I'll also take a look at that and see what I can noodle out there, and if I find a good answer, I'll send it to you.
Great. I very much appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's talk with another listener, this one on campus on line 2. Good afternoon.
Hi. I have a little hardware problem. Several months ago, I switched monitors with my boss, and I had a regular full-size monitor, but I didn't have enough room on my desk, so I switched with him, and he's got a flat screen. So I'm working with a flat screen now, which I really like, except that about two or three times a week when I power up in the morning, it doesn't come on. And you can hear the rest of the computer systems all booting up, and it gives me a little beep when it's pretty much done. But the computer, I mean, the screen, the little on light is orange. It just kind of blinks out at a certain stage in the boot up process.
Hmm. And then what do you do?
Then I wait for that beep to happen, and then I just interrupt everything and turn the power off totally and then start again. And usually the second time it does it, occasionally I have to do it a third time.
And then it comes up.
And then it comes up.
And
it's right before, you know, you get the blue welcome screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's and you start seeing the mouse being able to move. It's right before there where it either does or does not work.
So you start your computer,
mm-hmm.
and is that monitor on when you start your computer?
It's
powered
it's got
up.
The orange light, yeah.
Yeah, is it powered up by the computer? I mean,
yeah.
Do you have it plugged into the computer as opposed to plugged in
right.
independently?
So
it should be getting power when you start up.
Yeah.
So you start it up, and it sounds like it's starting. It looks like everything's going okay, and then it just kind of blinks out.
Yeah, it's like you see the initial screens,
mm-hmm.
and then it gets about maybe halfway through or most of the way through, and then the screen goes black, which is normal. And then the next thing that happens is the mouse starts working, and you can see it. You can, if you move the mouse, you can see it move, and then the blue welcome screen comes on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting here watching it as it boots up, and I keep fiddling with the mouse until I see that mouse moving, and then I know I'm okay. But sometimes the mouse doesn't come on, and then it goes blink, and the orange light comes on the screen monitor, and it just stays black.
And has the computer apparently started up? It's just the monitor that's
yeah.
not working? So,
yeah.
So you think the computer actually is booting up. Your monitor is just not displaying that for
right.
some reason.
The monitor is turning itself off. It's not that the pixels are gone. It's turning itself off.
Right, right. Well,
and it's everything's a Dell. It was a Dell
right.
before. It's a Dell now.
Right. Good question. So I'll say three things you might want to look at. Okay. It's kind of a perplexing thing that's happening.
We've all been very perplexed.
If it's all a Dell, then one of the things I was going to suggest was there are couple of kinds of connections for monitors. There is a connection for the old, cathode ray tube type monitor, and then a digital connection for your flat screen monitors. And mm-hmm. sometimes what you've done is you plug that flat screen monitor into a cathode ray tube connection. So you got to have an adapter.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes having that adapter between, the monitor and the connection to the video system can create little glitches like that. But it doesn't sound like if it came from Dell and it's all Dell stuff.
Yeah, so it's got the color-coded little
yeah.
plugs.
And it goes yeah. directly into the video card, right?
Right?
The port on the back. There's no adapter between it
no.
and the... Okay. So it probably shouldn't be that. Flat-screen monitors, it used to be... CRT monitors had all kinds of resolutions they could be set at. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you right-click on your desktop and you bring up the settings for that and you look at your, monitor settings, there'd be various ways that you could set it, right? Now, flat-screen monitors want to be set usually at one and maybe at most two resolutions, okay?
Okay.
And sometimes if you've got a set outside, if you got your settings outside that those parameters...
Mm-hmm.
You can get kind of glitchy things, the kind of thing I think you're describing as well.
Okay.
So you might want to see where that monitor is supposed to be, what its resolution is supposed to be set at, and make sure that it's in there.
Okay.
Might do is go, you should be able to right-click on your desktop and bring up settings for your display, right? And that's where you want to look. And if nothing else, maybe punch default and have Windows set it for you. And that
okay, might, and it should that, be one and see.
Well, one or two.
Display says plug and play monitor Radeon X 300 series.
Which yeah.
Sounds like.
Does it say what resolution it should be set at?
Screen resolution. It says it's now on 1024 by 768.
Oh, that sounds okay.
Okay.
That would sound like a logical setting for a flat screen monitor.
Okay.
So.
There
are those two things, and the third thing that occurs to me right off, without getting into further research, is the power settings you have for your monitor. Okay, whether you've got it set to go to sleep automatically and that kind of thing. And if you'll go to the Windows control panel, there should be a suite of power things in there. And one of the things you can control is, sleeping of your monitor. And it might have something to do with that. You might try turning it off, if you had it set to go to sleep at after a certain amount of time, you might just try turning it off altogether and see if this problem goes away. Mm-hmm. And then you've got some idea that it's related to that. Okay.
Okay.
Now, and then the fourth thing, again, that occurs to me in a troubleshooting sense off the top of my head is, you may be having issues with whatever video system is in there, your card, the actual physical hardware. So
is there some kind of a driver that should have been installed with this? I mean, that was my first thought. It came with a certain monitor that probably had a driver already installed.
Right, again, but it's all Dell equipment, right?
Right.
And, I mean, it came together. Is that right? I mean,
monitor came with a different computer. But
oh, okay.
But I traded with my boss. But
yeah,
they all.
Yeah. Well, it's possible. That's also possible that you need. Do you know, does it say Dell on the monitor?
Yeah.
Well, you might, and does it have, can you tell, like, what model it is, what model from Dell it is?
Well, other than what I just told you, that thing.
You might go to Dell's website and support area and downloads and see if there's some kind, if there's a new driver to download for the monitor.
Okay.
That's another possibility. But, and these are all things I'm guessing at this mm-hmm. point. Without going, doing more than I can do sitting right here now.
A common problem.
It's not that it's a bizarre problem that I've never heard of before. It's one of those problems, though, that could be a lot of things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you kind of have to go through the numerous possibilities before you ratchet it down. Again, the driver thing is a possibility, but generally, you're using XP, Windows XP, I take it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many drivers in there, and it's Dell equipment, you'd think that it would be there.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Well,
so,
I'll check on those things then.
And if you would, did you write my email address down?
No.
It's Kline, Kline, at news-gazette.com.
Okay.
And if you would send me, a little description of what's happening there,
mm-hmm.
I could probably do better for you.
Okay. Great.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
You're welcome. Next, we go to a listener on line one. Caller in Urbana, hi.
Hello.
Hello there.
Yes. Greg, I've got a problem with printing from my email. I use Eudora. And certain emails that come in, when I print them, they print extremely small and scrunched way over to the left-hand side of the page. I look at the print preview on it, and up where it talks about the font size,
mm-hmm.
it says shrink to fit.
Right.
And I don't understand how to make it not go to that shrink to fit. I have to readjust that to 100%
mm-hmm.
to be able to get a decent printout.
So it's just automatically shrinking it to fit.
Yes.
What happens when you readjust it to 100%?
The next email, I can print that fine. The next email that, well, not all my emails do this, but the next one would come from that same place or from some various other places. You know, we'll do the same thing. I'll go to the shrink to fit.
Well, but that sounds like it's a setting that you have to enact that shouldn't be happening automatically, or is it set to happen automatically?
No, I don't know where to look. I've looked every place I can think of to.
There's not like a little check mark next to shrink to fit, and if you uncheck it doesn't do it.
In the preferences or the.
Well, or on the menu structure there.
Of the email program,
where is the shrink to fit option located?
That I don't know. I have looked both in the
options.
I've looked in printers options. I can't find it.
Where do you see it when you're printing?
Well, I only see that it's marked shrink to fit when you put a print preview up. And the only way I can change it is to go to print preview, change that to 100%,
uh-huh.
And then print.
Okay. So you go to print preview and you change that to 100% and you print, and then it prints okay.
And it prints okay.
Right. But it's some and not others. That's the odd thing there. But see, it sounds to me like the setting is in your printing software, not necessarily in the email software, right?
Uh-huh. What I was thinking.
Yeah.
Is there
if you go to file and print, do you get, you know, a dialog box with a number of settings there that you can
I haven't
change?
Seen it. No.
Okay.
I really haven't. You can go there. Let's see, I don't believe I've seen it there when I've gone into there and gone to the properties portion.
So I don't, I don't have a computer with Eudora in front of me. But let's say I go to print here and I get a dialog box, and I've got another, various options there as to how I can print the document I'm looking at. It happens to be a web page. So you don't see anything like that when you go to print?
I haven't seen it, no.
Well, I don't understand that. Well,
I was wondering if there were some interactions. The emails that I first noticed it on were being sent to me by Outlook Express.
Right, right.
I just wondered if there was some interaction between that and Eudora that would cause it to do that.
Yeah, but it's happening with some and not with others.
Yeah.
So, you know,
well,
that'd be the...
Yeah, but they're not all Eudora. You know, everything isn't Eudora.
Oh, you're saying it's only happening with messages people are sending you from Outlook Express.
That's where I first noticed it, and I think there have been others also, but mainly I've noticed it with the Outlook Express.
Right. Well, one thing that occurs to me is, okay, so... You know, various email programs have various fonts, okay? Various types of type, right?
Okay,
so
yeah.
Your computer may not have those types of type. Comes in, you want to print something, right? What your computer does is try and get the closest approximation to that typeface that it has and print it like that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of the time email is, well, not most of the time, but it depends on if that email is formatted or not. If people are sending you straight text email, you probably don't have any problem, right? Because it's just every straight text email, everybody's got those fonts on their computer, right?
Well, this one in particular that I first noticed with, that's just being, you know, a straight text. It's not somebody formatting it trying to make some.
Right.
You know,
does that print correctly?
No, that doesn't.
Well, don't know. it's odd that it does it sometimes and it doesn't. It's odd that it won't print straight text in a good fashion.
I only notice it in the email program printing from there, you know.
Right.
Printing from Word or anything else comes fine.
Right. So, but it does print fine when you do a print preview and tell it to print 100%.
Yes.
Oh, well,
someplace it's getting set to an automatic print, shrink to fifth.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know where the setting for that would be in Eudora. Okay? So, and I don't know whether it's a setting in Eudora or it's a setting in your printing software. What kind of printer are you using? You know, and what?
Using HP printers.
Yeah, and it's got HP drivers, right? So
yes.
it may be a setting in there somewhere.
Well, again, I've looked at it, and
yeah.
I can't seem to find it.
Yeah. Well, again, if you'll send me a description of the problem, I'll try and explore it further and see if I could find an answer. You know, once again, it's one of those things that could be any number of things. It's kind of hard not being in front of it to pin it down for you.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, okay, I'll be happy to send that to you.
Yeah, did you get my email address?
I certainly have, yeah.
Okay, if you'll send that to me, I'll look into it, and we'll see if we can find you a more definitive answer.
Okay, thank you very
but
much.
But if it works, you know, doing a print preview and telling it to print 100%, you know, you've got an out there,
yeah.
And it doesn't sound. Yeah, it doesn't sound.
It's just an extra step on every time you go into there. You have to check it to see what it's going to do.
Yeah, but as computer problems go,
it's a minor aggravation.
It's not as bad as it could be. Let's put it that way.
Okay,
I'll give you the
look on the bright side.
The,
right?
The other answer when that I always give people when they have these kind of annoying printer problems, which are not, you know, that unusual, is hey, you can always cut and paste it. Okay, you can always copy it and paste it into a Word document and print it that way.
So, yes,
you know.
Okay,
but I realize that's a kludge, but it does work.
Yes.
All right, okay, send it along, I'll see what I can find out.
I'll see what I can do on that.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Very good. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and today we're doing our monthly program on computers, and we've welcomed back to the program today science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Klein. If you'd like to join us this afternoon with a question, give us a telephone call. Give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455-333-WILL 800-222-WILL. It feels a little bit like you're a doctor today, Greg.
Because
you know, when we have doctors on the shows, we always say, now remember, the doctor cannot see you, but we can help you. But you know,
sometimes we, you know, a lot of times we have questions that are fairly easy to answer, like the first one, I think, was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes these things can be, there can be a number of causes, and it's just, it's a little hard without knowing more about it, to pin them down. You kind of need to get a little more detail and compare that to the body of literature that's out there about the problem.
Let's take another call. Listener in Champaign, line one, hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to say, but I don't have time to discuss it because I'm on my way to work, but I have had similar problems to the man just before. But my question is, I all of a sudden have become very curious as to why there is a history, a mandatory, it appears, history of a person's usage on the Internet.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know of any, I don't know of any situation where that doesn't exist or if it can be taken off, but I guess what brought it to mind was that some senators or people in Bush's administration were being told that you think you've erased it, but you haven't, and that's probably true, but I'm curious as to why, you know, people can't save our library stuff, and yet we are forced to have our Internet stuff saved.
Mm.
And are we, in fact, forced to have it saved?
No.
Okay, well, how do you take it off?
Okay.
I mean, if you wanted to.
I'll give you, do you use a Windows machine, ma'am?
Yes.
Do you use what, Windows XP probably?
Yeah, I believe so.
And you probably
I'm
use...
Not, I'm not computer savvy at all.
Okay. You probably use Internet Explorer as your browser, right?
I have two or three browsers.
Okay. Do you have Firefox?
Yes.
Well, you know, you can go into Firefox, into the security and privacy settings there.
Uh-huh.
And you can set it. You just check the boxes, where the settings are is fairly obvious. You just check the boxes next to them. And you can set it to delete all that every time you quit out of Firefox.
Oh, is that right?
Right.
Oh.
Right. You can also tell it how long you want to you want it to keep your history. So you could say keep it 1 day or keep it, you know, uh-huh. 7 days or whatever. But the ultimate thing you can do is to tell it to just flush all that stuff every time you quit out of Firefox.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Or start up. Quit or start up. And it'll eliminate that for you.
Okay.
As far as why that's there, you know, theoretically it's there as a convenience thing. So
right.
I'm popping around in the morning and I go to a website and later in the day I need to find it again and I don't have to look it up. I just go to my history. And
I only learned about it 3 months ago. Yeah. I mean, I didn't even know it was there. But then since I did learn about it, I thought, well, this is... You know, why do I have to have this?
You don't.
If I don't want it.
Right. You don't. In fact, you can set Firefox not to keep any of that stuff. So.
I see. Okay.
And not just your history, but the local files that it keeps cached so that it can bring them up faster. If you go back to that web page and it hasn't changed, or the little cookies, you know, little text files that keep track of your passwords and usernames and other preferences on websites. You can have it flush all of that stuff out or not keep it at all. So it's all there are a set of security and privacy settings in there. And I'm telling you this for Firefox because I suggest that people use it because I think it tends to be somewhat more secure than Internet Explorer. But in later versions of Internet Explorer, these same kinds of features are in there. So, yeah.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. If you've got a question about computers and computing. Our guest this afternoon, Greg Klein, he's a reporter for the News Gazette. So also, you know, that... when I'm using Google, then I have a history there. And if I tell it clear history, is it really gone?
Well, no.
No. Okay.
It's not gone in this sense. Okay. You know, nothing is ever really gone from your it stores your history in a file on your hard drive, right? And so you can delete that data out of there. But in fact, nothing is really ever gone from your hard drive until it's overwritten, right? What happens is that any data you delete, let's say it's, you know, it's the cache of your web browser or some program you downloaded or a Word document or whatever, all that happens is it doesn't actually go away. That space just gets marked as usable now, so it can be overwritten. But that stuff is still there until it's overwritten. There are, you know, readily available pieces of software that can recapture that deleted data until it's overwritten. That's also why there are for example, in Mac OS X now, there's a way to secure delete, so to speak. And what happens is, when you delete that data, it doesn't just get marked. The space doesn't just get marked as being available. It gets overwritten by gobbledygook at the same time. So it's you know, not easily recoverable. Let's put it that way.
Okay, let's take.
But you know, it's a lot of work. It'd be a lot of work for somebody. And to want to get that stuff, you know, you've deleted off there, and most people, as I tell them, you know, they're not we're not the National Security Administration or whatever, so we're probably not that worried about it. But on the other hand, you know, you have things on your computer that maybe you wouldn't like anybody mm-hmm. to, if you did.
Especially when it comes time to get rid of the computer.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Well, certainly when you get rid of the computer, probably your best bet, if you're really worried about it, your best bet is to just take the hard drive out of there. And if you're giving it to somebody, or even if you're selling it, the only way to be absolutely certain is to take the hard drive out and smash it with a sledgehammer, okay, or shred it, you know, with an industrial shredder or whatever. But again, you can get software that will overwrite your hard drive and overwrite it, literally as many times as you want to tell it to overwrite it, so that it makes it so expensive and so time-consuming to ever get that data off there, to try to get that data off there, that nobody really is going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, you'd need a supercomputer and a lot of man hours to get it done, and it's just not worth it to anybody. I wanted to say that I lied to that lady earlier about importing her addresses into Gmail. That should be fairly easily. I was thinking of importing email from Outlook Express or Outlook into Gmail, and that's a lot more complicated. But she should be able to go to the export function for her addresses in Outlook. I think she was using Outlook, and export them as a CSV or comma-separated value file, and then go to Google and tell it to Gmail and tell it to import that. Go to the file menu, import, and just import that file, that CSV file, and that should get her addresses in. It ought to work just fine.
Okay.
So, and fairly painlessly. Now, if she wants to move her email over, that's the point at which it becomes complicated, because that email is stored in a proprietary Microsoft format, so you've got to get it into a non-proprietary mailbox format, and to do that, you have to import it into Thunderbird and then export it as a mailbox file, and then use a little program to get Google Gmail to pick it up. But if you just want your addresses, that should be relatively painless.
Not so bad. Okay. Yeah. Let's talk with a listener now in Decatur. Line 4, hi.
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 I just had an observation about, I think the first two callers, you may have just alluded to one of them, but the first one about the word processor.
Uh-huh.
I understood that OpenOffice works on a Mac.
That's also a very good point.
And it's every bit as full featured as Microsoft Word.
That's right.
And it's free.
That's right. And the qualification that I'd put on that, and is why I suggested some of the things to her. I suggested is that yes, it's every bit as full featured as Microsoft Word. That's a good thing. And it's also a bad thing because, it's the same kind of resource-intensive program that Microsoft Word is as well. So,
right. Well, the other comment about the lady who wanted to import her Outlook address book into Gmail, couldn't she just import it to Firefox and use Firefox on the Mac?
Well, but she wants to actually import it into Gmail.
Well,
yeah.
Well, I mean, I thought she just picked Gmail as an alternative. I thought maybe she didn't realize that she could just use Firefox and just install Firefox and click import and you got it.
Well,
also emails would her emails would go to Firefox.
Well, they'd go to Thunderbird.
I mean Thunderbird.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I said Firefox, but I meant Thunderbird.
Yeah, and that's also a good point. If she wanted, but my impression is that she wants to use Gmail because it's accessible anywhere, right? You know, webmail. So if she wanted to do that, then she needs to import her addresses up there into Gmail. But you're also right. If she, I think she has to continue using Outlook. And she wants to, as I understood it, to also use Gmail, because then you know, her messages are up there on the Google servers as well, and she can get to them that way if she doesn't have Outlook handy. But if she can switch email programs,
right,
then Thunderbird is a nice alternative. But if she could switch email programs, she could also just use mail that's built into Mac OS X. So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
Mm-hmm.
There, we'll leave it.
Okay.
Wrap it up for another month.
All right. And his point is good. And if you just go to Open Office, which is just openoffice.org, www.openoffice.org, that's there and available as well. But unless you need a really big, hunking suite of office programs, I'd think about a little word processor instead.
Okay, very good. Greg, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Greg Klein of the News Gazette. This program, Computers in You, we do it once a month on the third Monday of the month. It's 8 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Let's check in now with Todd Gleason to find out what happened today in Chicago and in Kansas City.
Thank you much, Celeste. Taking a look at the numbers from Chicago, pretty rough day if you're a farmer or someone who happens to own product, that would be wheat or corn or soybeans. Futures in the corn pit were sharply lowered, down the limit, 20 cents lower in all the this year's contracts, with the exception of the September, this year meaning this marketing year. Beans were down the limit in everything that we watch, all the way out to August of 2008. So there were a lot of lower marks in the wheat pits and the corn pit in Chicago, along with the bean pit. We'll start with the wheat. September futures were down 19 cents today. They finished with a settlement price at 601 and three quarters. They had a high of 614 and a half there, low at 599 and a half, a settlement at 601 and three quarters, down 19. They did not lock the limit lower for the day. Limit on the wheat, I believe, is 30 cents. December future, 629 and a half, the high, the low at 615, and a settlement price at 618. They were down 17 and a quarter. They didn't settle the limit lower is what I meant to say. March futures, 634, the high, the low at 20 and a half, a settlement price at 626. They were down 14 and a half. And the May futures in the wheat pit, 622, the high, the low at 612, settlement price at 616. They were down 12 cents for the day. And the July futures, 572, the high, the low at 562, settled on that low, down 14. In the corn pit, limit lower, down 20 cents, 348 and a quarter the high for the nearby Septembers, the low at 334 and three quarters, settled on that low, down 20 cents. December futures settled on their low at 348 and a half, the high for the day at 362 and one quarter. March contract at 375 and a half high, the low and settlement price down the limit at 20 lower at 361 and three quarters, and the May futures 389 and three quarters the high, the limit was a limit moved down 20 cents at 370 and three quarters for the low in the settlement for the May. July futures today, a 389 and three quarters high, low at 370 and three quarters. They were down the limit, and that was their settlement price. July futures, 390 the high, the low at 78 and three quarters, settled there, down 20 for the day. And September's, 395 the high, the low in settlement at 379 and a quarter. That was their low.